All right, this whole episode is just a love letter to Ann Miner. It's fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Coming to you from the Salad Dressing Studios in West Roxbury, Massachusetts, I'm Bobby Pape, and this show has everything. And this week, neither snow nor rain nor heat nor gloom of night will keep my fellow podcasters away from completing our appointed rounds as we talk about mail. You're welcome in advance, Ann Miner. Joining me with a special delivery into your inboxes this Monday morning, or whenever you get around to listening to us, in Stick a Butter Studios in New Brighton, Minnesota, it's Anne Don't At Me Lundholm. Good evening, Anne.
Good evening, Bobby.
And in Money Pit Studios in Detroit, Michigan, it's Meredith, the MVH Van Harn. Good evening, Meredith.
Good evening, Bobby.
So we'll be talking mail. It's a full-on mail call, but we can't call the episode that, or people are going to think it's a listener mail episode, although we should probably do a listener mail.
Wait. I thought we were talking mail like the thunder from down under.
Oh, shoot. I thought somewhere in between. What are we going to do?
Wait, what's in between?
Sexy postal workers?
Exactly.
I bet there's a calendar.
Or if there isn't, we should get on this. I thought we were going to be talking about Ben Gibbard most of the time. So there's your outro music. No, we're going to talk about our experiences with mail, and it's going to be a little bit of a hodgepodge. But before we do, we'll do some small talk. And then, is it irony? The mailbag. And then, of course, at the end, we'll do Tishy Recommends and how you can get involved with the show. And take us into a little small talk, would you?
I'm sorry. I'm currently on Amazon looking at this is what a sexy postal worker looks like, : monthly planner, calendar, diary organizer, 6x9 inches postal worker joke mail carrier.
It's just so, 12 different scenes of Cliff from Cheers.
Yeah, I'm not. Oh, I'm sexy hunks. 2024 calendar doesn't say mail.
I'm seeing a lot
nothing to do with the postal service.
Hunk is usually, men. I mean, I don't want to be gender normative in 2024, but I don't know that I've ever heard a woman described as a hunk.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
Boy, this is really thin, I have to say. Disappointed, but there is a business opportunity. We are right about that. All right. Small talk.
Googling in an incognito window took me to an Instagram feed titled Your Sexy Hot Mailman. And I would say that none of those four words should be used to describe the first pictures that came up. So.
Well, to each their own, right?
Yeah. Oh, God, Amazon. I thought it would be clicking on sexy postal costumes, but no, it's just sexy men costumes in general. And I would not fit in any of these. Oh, no. Well, at least it's incognito. Oh, that's a reindeer.
Sexy reindeer?
Well, yeah, just barely. It's got a long face. Let me put it that way.
Where's the red nose?
Just where you think it would be. This has gone too far. But that could be delivered by USPS, maybe.
Sure could.
Yeah, look at us bringing it back. All right. And small talk, please.
For God's sakes, let's go to small talk. The small talk is thin on the ground today, but I have something that I wanted to ask you about because I mentioned, I forget which show it was in now, they all blur together so much, that I'm thinking about buying a new bed. I'm going to get an adjustable bed and thinking about moving the bedroom around and getting a TV there and all that stuff. And the way that I go about these things is I know I want to do it at some point, but I'm like, I don't want to spend the money right now. I don't want to spend the money right now. I don't want to spend the money right now. I don't want to spend the money right now. Now we have to do it. Now, go. Get it done. So it's like at some point, there is a switch that will flip in my brain when it comes to these, what I would call a big purchase decision, that takes me from I'm going to do it in the future to the I must have it done now. And then it becomes more important to accomplish it than to even get something that I like.
Sure.
And I'm aware that this might be a little strange. And so I wanted to ask you guys, how do you go about making a big money spending decision? Because I'm trying to find some healthier ways to do this, guys.
Well, I mean, I think you just described my process.
Oh.
I mean, I agonize. I don't want to spend a dime on anything I don't have to. And then
right?
Once I'm committed.
Well, full speed ahead.
Right. I think we've discussed this before, but because, you know, Sam and I, we don't have like an official dollar threshold over which we must discuss or under which we don't. But a lot of the major decisions that we make together because they impact both of us. So I'm thinking of times we've bought a car. Bed's a good example. Let is not the right word in a marriage, but I insisted that Sam pick out the mattress because I knew that she's fussier about it than I am. And whatever she likes, I'll be able to work with. And she bought a particularly expensive mattress, which has been really good for her and fine for me. But that was one of those things where I recognized that she should just have the final control over that. And I didn't even want to be there because I just knew, you know, she figured out, kind of knows what I like. But when we're deciding on things together, like when we bought our last several cars, actually, we have the Olive Garden moment. Olive Garden exists in our world as the place we go between evaluating the thing we might buy and then deciding we're going to buy it.
And it's inflection point.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever gone to Olive Garden and then decided not to buy it. But it's been the 90-minute soup, salad, and breadstick-fueled cooling-off period where we say, sales manager's not taking us for a ride. We're choosing to buy this car today, right now, because he told us we could. So, you know, I completely get it. But I would say maybe my advice is build in that chain restaurant cooling-off period where, you know, you don't just get suckered into, pressured into buying the thing that gets put in front of you, you know, take that excuse. We always know going in, we're probably going to buy it, but we're going to make sure that we walk away, think about it, and come back, even if it's the same day.
I don't know if me sitting at Perkins by myself will have the same effect, but I see your point.
You could shadow box at Perkins.
My approach is to research for like a year and narrow it down to exactly what I want and then wait for a sale. Like, wait for a coupon code or wait for a sale, and then I feel a little bit better about it. But I have a very hard time pulling the trigger on a big purchase like that. Like, that's why I haven't bought a couch yet.
Sure.
Meanwhile, Anne's over here sleeping on burlap sacks stuffed with corn husks.
I am definitely waiting for a sale. The problem is that I feel the time barreling at me like a freight train. Like, the decision is coming, and when it gets there, it's like giving birth. It's like, it's now. You don't have a choice but to make the decision because there's so much pressure in your vagina or something. I understand that. That's kind of how it works.
That's how birth
works. But, like, once I feel...
I'm lost.
Once I feel the switch flip, like, it's gotta happen. So, like, I started feeling it coming just after President's Day, and I remember that because I was like, God damn it, the mattress sales have just finished.
Yeah, you missed the Washington special, the Lincoln special.
Yep. So yeah. I figure they have mattress sales at Memorial Day too, right?
I would be stunned if they don't have them for St. Patrick's Day. We were discussing this the other night offline at Jambo. St. Patrick's Day is a real holiday in Boston and not to any of the rest of you.
No. I'm pretty sure there's no St. Patrick's Day sales. But if there isn't one for Memorial Day, which I think I can wait that long, then there will be one at Labor Day, which I don't know about because the drive to get it done is just starting to ramp up to me. And, like, as far as doing research goes, I think, Meredith, you probably do it the very smart way. And theoretically, I want to do that. And I have done the research, and I have kind of an idea of what I want mattress bed-wise. But my mom is like, you know, there's this place down in Minneapolis where you can go where they have a sample of one of every mattress out there, including like the ones, the mattress in a box that you buy online.
Well, there's a million of them.
Purple. All of them now. Yeah. So you can actually go down there and lie on one of them before you buy them. And kind of get that. I'm like, that's so smart. I don't want to do that.
I always want to call it Thistle and Shamrock, but that's not it. That's the show on public radio.
That doesn't exist anymore?
I don't know. It was good while it lasted. And we had another one that was our guest bed. And actually, I slept on it for a while in Albany, too. And then my greatest accomplishment was buying a vacuum bag and re-vacuuming it and rolling it up and then putting straps around it.
Are you talking about Tuft and Needle?
Yes, that's it.
Tuft and Needle, yes. Casper is the only other one that I remember at this point.
Tuft and Needle is my mattress, too, and I like it a lot.
Thistle and Shamrock actually might be a good.
Since I'm buying an adjustable bed, I don't know if you get a regular mattress with those or not, or if you need something a little bit more pliable. I don't know. I've kind of done research. Maybe not enough. But then for stuff like, I'm going to buy a headboard, right? I've never had a headboard in my life. But I don't know. Like, I want to buy the headboard with the bed so that I know that it fits. And theoretically, they'll deliver it all to me and set it up.
They're all kind of standard sizes, so they'll fit.
Yeah.
I wouldn't worry too much about that.
But I get a little worried that I'll get in there and I'd be like, and I need a headboard. Let's see. Not that one, not that one, not that one. Ah, that'll work. You know, rather than getting something I really like, I'll get something that's available and is okay.
We have an aftermarket headboard. It's interesting. Our bed frame, our base, it's just a platform, is all wood and comes together with just a few bolts, and then all the wooden slats slide into it. And we do have a box spring and the mattress on top of this thing. And it doesn't have a headboard, and I wanted a headboard. So Sam bought one, and it's, you know, soft, and it has different various holes in it so that you can bolt it to the bed frame. But our bed frame base doesn't really have anywhere to bolt into it. It would be easy enough to drill some holes and put some bolts in and whatever. But what I did is I went and bought a couple of relatively small C-clamps from Home Depot for a couple of bucks each. And I just clamped it on each side just to test drive it. And that's, And then, you know, when we moved last, just undoing the clamps and then just redoing the clamps when we got here. It's easy, convenient. Nobody sees them because they're on the floor against the wall. So what I'm saying is, and this is kind of on what Meredith was saying, you'll be fine with the headboard. Like, you'll be able to make it work one way or another.
I'm just really trying to go into this process, giving it a little bit more space and a little bit more time than my brain wants me to.
Sure.
There
must be a Wirecutter article for this or something to that effect. You're going to start subscribing to Mattress Monthly and...
I'm sick of researching. I cannot research for a year. I can research for an afternoon. And then I'm like, that's enough. Let's go.
By all means, go to the mattress store in jeans and a blouse and pretend that that's your sleeping environment and roll around on every mattress everybody else has rolled around on.
I don't want to, though.
Yeah.
The time for looking has passed. I didn't do any looking except on the internet.
My brain is a strange and wonderful place
and sometimes not so wonderful, but I don't know. I just wonder how mentally healthy people do these sorts of things.
I don't know that you've come to the right place to ask.
Well, you're all I got.
I am jealous, though, because I've wanted a Craftmatic adjustable bed forever because I'm an old man.
Too.
And Sam won't go for it. And I'm like, you can keep your side flat. But I want to sit up in a little bit and I want my legs up a little bit. I've been going back to the gym, not to brag, because, you know, Planet Fitness Black Card holder here.
And
that comes with the what they now call, as we just heard tonight on a commercial, the Planet Fitness Spa, which includes the hydro massage bed. And that's sort of your back is up a little bit and your legs are up a little bit. And I was like, yep, I could just live and die in that position. Like, I just want to be cradled.
Wait, on your back, not on your stomach.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I want to watch TV because it's hydro massage, so it's like got the water blasting you from underneath.
Mm-hmm.
But like, yeah, that's the perfect, it's the angle I'm always trying to achieve in my overpriced leather chair that I bought all those years ago. I want to be just slightly elevated and legs slightly elevated, and I want to have a TV at a certain angle, and I want to have ideally some sort of Kindle or iPad, probably on a mount over my face. And then if I had the hamster bottle for the water over the bed, which I've still not found, I really, you know, would be pretty much all set. I would be perfect. I would never move.
Mm. The problem is the hamster bottle is too small. You got to get like a rabbit bottle or a guinea pig bottle.
Right. Well, no, I want like a man-sized one. So just scale it up. Whatever the ratio is.
Well, yes, but I'm trying to think of what's available.
Sure.
Maybe they have some giraffe bottles, but I don't think giraffes drink that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to have to repurpose some sort of holding tank.
Think of how high you'd have to put a giraffe water bottle on their cage for them to be able to drink it.
You'd have to strap it up near the top of a tree.
Yeah.
But then refilling it would be a bitch.
Yep.
These are the mysteries. We need someone from a zoo to come on the show.
We sure do.
Figure out which water bottles.
Because we've got some good ideas for them.
Yep.
All right, well, let's move away from my purchasing decisions and go to Bobby's PSA.
Yeah, this is just really quick. I am going to be in Philly for one night. This is going to come out on the 18th, right? So this Friday, I'm going to be in Philly for one night because Blue Heron is doing a concert at UPenn at the library.
Friday, Friday, one night only.
That's right. Flying girls, in Friday
girls,
morning.
Girls, girls.
The some, although I think they prefer to be called women and professional singers. we're flying in, doing the gig, and then leaving Saturday morning because we're going to do it again in Boston Saturday night. But if anyone's in the Philadelphia area and wants a ticket, I'm going to assume right now that I can make that happen. I actually don't know, but I'm sure if I ask, I can sneak you in. I'll say you work with us. So let me know. I'll be in Philly for one night. Staying in Rittenhouse Square, I think, and relying solely on public transportation. So, Philly, I'll be there for a minute. Go find a pretzel somewhere. And if you're around, let me know. That's it. That's all I got.
Pretzel? You're not going for the cheesesteak?
You know, I love a steak sandwich. You know, maybe. It's a lot of effort.
I mean, I don't know. I've never had a cheesesteak, so, but I hear they're a big deal.
They're good.
They are, and they're good. Here's a depressing thing. I can tell I'm getting old because I do not crave the massive calorie bomb meals like I used to. Like, there was a time every time I went back to Buffalo, I had to have a giant pile of chicken wings, and I had to have a beef on whack, and I had to have a late night chicken finger sub, and I had to have all these different things that were Buffalo. And now I think of all those things that might, I just hurt.
Mm.
Like, if somebody wants to give me a few bites of that cheesesteak, that'd be awesome.
I'll split it with you.
Okay. I'll mail it to you.
Gross.
So yeah, Philly, one night only.
If
Friday.
Only we didn't have to do the mailbag, that would be a great segue
to Medium Doc.
Well, the mailbag's also going to be a good segment. There's mail everywhere in this, and I don't just mean the calendar that you just ordered.
That's right.
True. Yeah.
That... So, means it's time for the mailbag. First off, we've got a voicemail from previously mentioned Ann Miner. This is your show, Ann.
Yeah, this whole episode.
Ann sent us a voicemail, and it's about her best spring break / maybe worst spring break ever.
Yeah, best spring break question mark?
Question mark? Let's take a listen.
Hi, it's Ann Miner. I took zero spring breaks as a student of any age, so my most epic spring break was as a parent. My son was somewhere in the middle elementary years, and we decided to drive someplace that was, you know, maybe a half day's drive away or so. So definitely getting away, but nothing too far. And I made all the arrangements for us to stay at Walloa Lake State Campground, which is in La Grande, Oregon. La Grande is in the northeastern corner of Oregon, and my thinking was that, hey, by April, southern Washington is really getting pretty warm, and so this should be, you know, nice kind of outdoorsy place, springtime. Well, we're driving to Willow Lake, and we get to some pass or another, and there are significant traction requirements. I think the big trucks had to chain up. We didn't. We had all-wheel drive, but it was snowing a lot. The actual weather kind of dissipated, but the landscape still reflected that it was winter. We were staying at a Forest Service type cabin. Looking at the state campground site, it doesn't appear that those cabins are available anymore, but that's definitely where we stayed. My thinking, my planning, my uninformed planning was that, you know, there would be people hanging out, there would be kids to play with, it would be very chill and fun. We were the only people there because everybody else knew that it was winter. The elevation is high enough that it was winter, winter, winter. I'm attaching some pictures. It was very winter. We had fun. We did some day trips. We went to Joseph, Oregon, which is kind of a sweet little town. We hung out with the deer at the campsite. They were the only other creatures there. It was great, but spring, not so much. Anyway, it was fun. Not as expected, but sometimes you summon the ability to roll with the punches, and this was one of those times.
Oh, Anne, this sounds like something I would do. It's getting really warm, and then there's a blizzard.
I did like the picture of like the pinhead snowman.
I know, it's so cute. We got some pictures along with the voicemail and a beautiful vista, a very tiny headed snowman that her son built, and then her son with some deer visiting the door.
Mm-hmm. Although theoretically the deer could visit in the summer as well as in the winter.
They
but
could.
They were tromping around in the snow.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That sounds a little scary, and I'm glad it turned out okay.
Yeah.
Our question of the week last week was, what was your most epic spring break? And we got a couple of Facebook answers. Amanda says, probably going to Disneyland with my family, but bringing along my friend when I was in junior high school, so I had someone cool to hang out with. I worked my way through college, and I wasn't much of a party girl anyway, so no wild spring breaks for me.
Hmm. I think Disneyland is a good... But is Disneyland like a whole week? Because I mean, not to brag, but I did Disneyland in one day. Two parks, one day.
All of it?
It was exhausting. Yeah, I mean, you know, you had to go light on some of it in order to get it all in. It was like $175.
Ugh.
I mean, Jesus Christ.
God.
But I don't know. I guess when we went to Disney World, we went for a whole week, more or less.
I've never been to a Disney, so I can't answer this question. But maybe Amanda just went to some of the things.
Yeah, true.
I mean, we went for a day, but we only went to Magic Kingdom. And I had my fill from the day.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I'm still actually a little upset because the place I wanted to go in Disney World was Epcot. Because I wanted to go to all the different nationality villages or whatever they're called. And my parents made us stay at the hotel one night. And I babysat my brothers while they went off to sample the different cuisines and beverages
from
around the world. And I was like, man, come on.
I've never been to a Disney of any sort. And I probably never will. And that's fine with me.
Yeah. It's one of those things where you can be as anti-Disney as you want. Not saying that you are, but
I am.
People can be as anti-Disney as they want. But then you get there and you're like, God damn it, they know their business. Like, just watching the way they move the lines of people around, like the way they herd you through the parks at Disney, it's truly astonishing. Like, it's impressive. I will say that.
They must have it down to a science. I mean, otherwise, what a
absolutely
nightmare. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, Lane says, I only went on spring break once during my senior year of college. I had two grad school visits, one to the University of Minnesota and one to the University of Iowa.
Oof.
Yeah. Minnesota was a structured weekend with a ton of people, but Iowa only does individualized visits, so I was able to bring my best friend with me, and when I wasn't visiting with professors, we got to hang out together, and the craziest we got was a few drinks downtown and spending too much money in thrift shops. While I didn't choose either of those grad schools, I did get to hang out with my closest friend for a few days, mostly on the University of Iowa's dime, which I consider a win. Absolutely.
I want to know how you spend too much money in thrift shops. I know. I mean, Macklemore taught us that there's a reason they're called thrift shops, right? How much were you buying, Lane?
There's some, I feel like I've been to a couple like curated thrift stores where they like go to Goodwill and get all the good stuff, and then you pay a premium for that because they did the sorting through for you.
Yeah, that's true. A consignment. Well, I guess it's not a consignment shop, but that's the way they did it. That's thrift store arbitrage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I have to say I've never gone thrifting because I don't love the idea of other people's junk that much. You know what I mean?
Yep. I used to go in high school, and now I'm too, I don't know, snobby for it, I guess.
I'm just so non-standard sized that I could never clothes shop at a thrift store anyway.
Yep.
Yeah, you know that I love a thrift store, but
you do love like a weird bargain basement kind of place.
Well, even like Savers and Goodwill and things like that. But I'm usually looking for the stuff. I grew up buying clothes at places like that out of necessity, which, you know. The more I think about my childhood, the harder it gets. So we won't go there now. But now I just love it because of the weird ass shit that you'll find. Just you never know what you're going to get. It's always worth a 15-minute walk through just to see what kind of crazy, you know, weird trophies or figurines or whatever. Christmas shopping for my friends and enemies. Well covered. And that's, in fact, I went into Savers the other day. And I think it was Rupp, R-U-P-P, the Rupp family. And it was like, and in Carol Rupp's house, in like a carved wooden sign. And I was like, who donates that? Why would anyone else buy that?
Who donates it and who accepts that?
Right.
And I guess they don't have time to vet your donations while your car is sitting there, but still.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, just, anyway. So yeah, I can't do the clothes anymore because they all smell a little funny.
Feel you funny. Wash them. I used to do it because what I wanted to wear wasn't popular when I was in high school. So I would go to thrift stores and vintage stores and stuff. And I usually didn't spend a lot of money because I didn't have a lot of money. But when I found something that I loved, it was like a treasure. Like, it was very rewarding to actually find something that I really liked.
So I think I don't have that genetic predisposition.
That's
fair. I don't have a treasure hunter gene.
I think I lost it. I don't care anymore. Now I'm just like, whatever, I'll go online. It's too easy.
Yeah.
We have so much less energy now I know. Than we did back in those days.
I know.
Well, we're older.
Yeah.
Not me.
Our boobs are the same age.
I was going to say, please tell us your secrets,
Anne. Just the rest of my body is breaking down.
Okay. Finally, Morgan says, mostly we went and still do go to the beach, Northern Oregon coast, but at 10, we went to Maui, and at 14, we went to Puerto Vallarta, and I did parasail. Oh, that sounds so fun.
I'm kind of jealous. Not kind of. I am jealous of West Coast people that it's so easy to go to Hawaii.
Yeah.
Like, for us, it's just a haul.
God, I had to fly across the whole country, land at LAX, and then go. And it was horrible.
Yep.
But it's worth it. I think I would still go to Hawaii. Like, I was so impressed with Hawaii. I thought I was going to be jaded about it, but it was amazing. And I need to go back.
Well, that's kind of how Disney works, too, you know?
Well,
you thought you were going to be jaded, and then you get there, and you're like, holy crap.
I don't want to feel that way about Disney, so I'm going to avoid it.
Yeah, I'm totally open to going to Hawaii. It just does seem very expensive and very long for people in this part of the country.
It is.
Yeah.
But it's great.
Well, you know, we know someone who's got a condo, so that part we could.
Mm-hmm. True.
We could figure out. And, you know, nothing says friendship like ruining somebody's opportunity to make money on their investment property by squatting in their condo.
Yep.
Thanks, Will.
I wasn't going to say a name.
We've talked about it before.
Maybe I could go back and maybe there wouldn't be a giant storm coming this time.
Or you could just bleep his name.
Nah, it's all right.
Okay.
Just remember, asshole has two syllables. So if you bleep, jerk. Give it a long bleep. Thanks for spring break stories. I think we should keep them coming because we're recording a little early and hopefully there will be more.
Yes.
Though I think we are learning that everybody is kind of like us, which is that they're kind of lame.
Imagine that our podcast audience is the same kind of people as us.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're not all Hillary and have.
True.
More stories than we could even tell on the show, which is what we found out after we did the show.
Yep.
Because other people in Hillary's life came out and said, what about this trip to Europe? What about that trip to Europe?
Hillary is like the apex of cool people that I know.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Which is either a commentary about me or a commentary about her. But I don't know.
She's going to hear that and it's going to go to her head. So.
Well, I know. That was my intention.
On that note, should we go to Medium Talk?
Please.
All right. So Medium Talk this week is mail. How do we have it written on the list? The mail show. And the spelling is correct. So it's your fault for misunderstanding with your homonym of
I don't know. I was just
men.
Thinking of what I want.
Signed, sealed, and delivered. This is a loose topic for us in that we, and mainly me, have a fascination with the mail. And I think that the unifying force for this was our love of and is our love of Jen Flass Andrews and keeping the Postal Service alive.
I know she did this topic 15 years ago.
Exactly. So we're just biting her rhyme, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a place in my heart for the post office. I don't know why exactly. It's just wired in me, but I love getting mail, even when it's just junk. I love sending mail. The two of you are on my relatively large Christmas card list, so you know I like sending mail.
I like getting your mail.
Me too.
It's the like circulars and flyers for shitty restaurants and I don't know law firms in the area that I don't like.
But don't you want to know where Diet Coke is on sale? That's literally why I went to the flyers that came yesterday.
No. And I really don't need any more mail from Livonia, Michigan. Asking about my credit cards.
What's wrong with Livonia?
I swear all credit card companies are based in Livonia because all the return addresses come from Livonia.
That's right by me, and that's where my gym is.
Your gym is a front for a mail
house. I guess
house.
So.
So I thought we would explore this topic loosely in that we don't have our usual charming, thoughtful, well-constructed and scripted structure. You know, usually every word is written out in advance when we do these things, but
usually we at least say, okay, what order are we going to do this in?
Right. But I think instead we've just got this pile up of topics.
I'm like mail that needs to be sorted.
Yeah, exactly. So we can do it all out here. And you know that you pay slightly less in postage if you've got enough mail and you can sort it. And that's a whole thing. So we'll get there. As a child, as we start many of these topics on this show, I am curious about our childhood experiences with mail because, as you know, I grew up with my mother and my grandmother, who was nuts and always doing some like pyramid schemey, shady, quick get rich quick business scheme. She was also self-publishing a magazine and all this other stuff. And so many times as a child, I was conscripted into folding, envelope stuffing, sealing, stamping, taking things to the post office. Maybe that's where that early love of mail started.
Back when stamps were like 17 cents a piece.
That's right. I mean, I remember when they were a quarter firmly. Actually, I feel bad saying this. I can't remember exactly how much they are now, even though I buy stamps all the time. Hang on. I bought three.
Say they're like 63 cents for a forever stamp, something like that.
Something like that. Did I buy 300 stamps the other day and I paid $204? Does that sound right? I think that sounds right. I'm literally punching into a calculator that lives on my desk right now. That's 68 cents a stamp. So I think that's it for a first class stamp. Although I will say We have some forever stamps from 2011, and I know because they've got the date on them, that I found in the back of a drawer recently. We've started using them again, and they look like they've been through hell, but they still work.
Mm-hmm.
God bless the forever stamp.
Yes, the USPS website says 68 cents.
There we go. First class. And of course,
that seems like a bargain for mailing a letter anywhere in the country.
Yes. Yes. The fact that they could take any dumb thing I wrote and get it all the way across the country.
Yeah.
I mean, we do. Our Christmas card list is, I think, around 100 people. And yeah, to be able to send out our little letter and card every year to people for that much. Although I will say.
No, it seems like a lot to me. Like, round up to a dollar.
Wow, that's some big rounding there, mathematician.
I know, but that's what it feels like.
I mean, that's how you would round, 0.68.
I mean, yeah, it would be free if it was an email, but like the heart and soul of knowing that we sat there watching TV while gluing those envelopes shut. Oh, and pro tip here, actually, and in fact, I did 300 more letters this week. Well, it was 270-something when I was done, but for work. Even if they have glue on them, I don't fuck around with those water sticks or anything. I just use glue stick.
Oh.
Yeah. And actually, what I really do is I buy the envelopes that peel and seal. But starting the new job, I inherited a large order of envelopes that do not have that I am trying to work my way through. So,
aren't you supposed to just do like a damp sponge or whatever?
Sure. Yeah, you can. But I don't like having water everywhere.
Oh. Honestly, I don't trust the glue on envelopes very much. So whenever I, rarely do send something, not like you, Bobby, I'm not a letter pro, but when I lick the envelope and close it, I always put a piece of scotch tape over the point.
I do that sometimes too.
I just don't trust it.
I do that with birthday cards because of the big flap, and the.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But glue sticks. I burn through a lot of glue sticks at work. But yes.
Here we thought you were just doing craft pictures, glitter pictures.
Well, glitter in the envelopes, but only for my enemies. So as a child, the other memory I had that came back was that in second or third grade, I had a pen pal. I can't remember his name. My teacher coordinated with a teacher in Fultonville, New York. And we swapped. So the classes, pen pals. And I think we stayed pen pals for a couple of years, I think. It lasted beyond the term of that class. So it started with the teachers swapping the letters. And then at some point, I think we did swap addresses and actually wrote back and forth. And I can't for the life remember who he is. I don't think I have any of those letters anywhere. There aren't a ton of relics from my childhood.
I have to say, a New York to New York pen pal experience is somewhat underwhelming.
It's a big state. I don't know. Lives three hours down the road.
Are you that different that you have a lot to talk about?
Yeah, well, the language barrier was a real challenge in the accents between Rochester and Fultonville.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm trying to think. And then, of course, TBTL did a pen pal program at one point. Mm-hmm. And my pen pal that I got paired with was Kate Bergstrom.
Oh. Hey.
And it was before Kate and I became friends. And so that actually helped create our friendship.
I have to say, when that came about, I was like, nope. Not even considering. Nope.
I didn't do it.
I do not do the TBTL holiday card exchange, but I do like that it happens. I like that there are Christmas cards.
Sure,
I think they do absolutely. Valentine's now too, or maybe something else. I enjoy that that's a thing. I don't know. There's just something about getting something in the mail that's not a bill or a circular that makes me happy. And so I wish that people sent more mail like that. Of course, in my world, most mail at work is checks, hopefully. That's what I'm always.
Ooh.
I'm always waiting for donation checks. One of the last reasons to write a check. So I'm usually in the office early, and so the mail comes about 9 a.m. at my work, and the mailman just slides in under the door. So it's always fun to see when things come under the door.
I think that's a pretty universal feeling.
Yeah, but
enjoy mail that's not routine.
Right, and of course, for the childhood thing, I had email pretty young, but most people didn't. In the, late 90s. So did either of you have pen pals? Did you do any of that stuff?
Mm-hmm. I did.
Chris, you were abroad for part of your childhood. And so maybe you were writing to some lucky kid in the States.
I think I was. In fact, I was a member of the Dodo Club, which is the conservation group started by Gerald Durrell, the naturalist and a subject of the Durrells in Corfu on PBS. And I recall writing to a girl maybe in Texas, I think it was at that time.
It was a young Hillary.
Oh, my God. I think her name was Katie, maybe, if I remember correctly. But that didn't last very long. I don't know. I don't connect to people that easily. So to do the work of keeping up a relationship that I don't really care about that much was a little bit more than I wanted as a 12-year-old.
It's a little more. I mean, this show is the primary reason I stay in touch with you guys. And
true.
Meredith, letter writing as a child?
I feel like I've talked about this before. I told my extremely embarrassing story about my pen pal on this show once. The Cliff Notes version is that I had a pen pal. I forget where she was from. I decided I didn't want to write her anymore. So I pretended to be my mother and told her that I had open heart surgery and died.
Yep. I remember that.
That's what an 8-year-old kid does when
I suspect that was a show about lying.
Probably. I don't remember. I still feel bad about it. I'm probably going to hell and I'm really sorry. But that's my one and only pen pal story. I mean, I wrote to her for a good year. And I did get busted and I did have to apologize. So
Jesus. Oh no.
Yeah. Probably did this poor child run to the parents and just be like, "My pen pal died."
I don't remember how it came to be, but my mom found out and she was like, "You cannot let her think that you're dead." So I had to write her a letter and be like, "I'm sorry." And I never heard back.
Why not? Why can't
I don't know. That was like my opinion too. I was like, "She doesn't know any different. It's fine.
It's not going to materially affect the outcome of her life."
I think she lived in Pittsburgh or something.
She's going to dedicate the rest of her life to curing childhood open heart surgery.
Well, good for her then. I hope she did.
Meredith, what does deliveries mean on your sheet?
Okay, so I feel like, mail is more than just letters. I don't get very many meaningful letters, but I do get a lot of packages, and I'm consistently annoyed that the people who deliver my packages don't give a shit where I want those packages to go. I live in Detroit, and at first I was very concerned that all my packages would get stolen if they were delivered on my front porch. So I was like, please put them on the back porch. Turns out nobody steals anything from my street. That's not the problem. The problem is I don't have an overhung front porch. I don't have a roof. Right. So if they put something on my front porch, it'll just get rained on and it'll be destroyed. So I ask them to please, 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 please put it on the covered back porch. I have a back porch with a roof. There's lots of room for it to not get soaking wet. And I don't know, 75% of the time they put it on the front porch and the other 25% they put it on the side door, which does not have a roof. And they almost never put it on the back porch. So that's my irritation with deliveries, is that they never follow my delivery instructions. Like, even on Amazon, I say, not the side door. Please, covered back porch. Which I just don't think is that difficult to understand, but they either don't care or don't look. So.
Could be both.
I seem to recall one time I got a big box of something and they put it right in front of the front door and then put the welcome mat on top of it, and I was like, what do we think we're accomplishing here? This is not a camouflage mat. Mm-hmm. This is not like a ghillie suit or whatever they wear.
The other fun thing, and they don't know that I never leave the house, but I'm getting the box from inside the house, and so when they put it right in front of the door, I have to open the door outwards and push the box over and knock it down the stairs, right? Because they put it right in front of the front door. Mm-hmm. Or it locks me in my house and I have to go all the way around to get it. And this is why my delivery should come to the back porch, the covered back porch.
This is kind of part of the problem of having a decentralized package system now with all your different carriers and your Amazons and your whatevers, is at least when it was only the postal service, there was just one set of rules. Mm-hmm. And so now I never know. It's like, because sometimes they ring the doorbell, and sometimes they don't ring the doorbell, and sometimes you get a notification that says your package has arrived, and sometimes you don't. Sometimes they take a photo of it, and sometimes they don't. And so it's like you never know which way it's going to arrive, so you can never plan for it.
Yep, exactly.
We had something come a couple of weeks ago by DHL.
Yeah, I've had that once or twice. It's weird.
Why do you exist?
Do they do? Are they more of a corporate service?
Things
or are they
that
just
like I bought some Korean
two?
Sunscreen recently, and it came through DHL, and it came directly from South Korea. Weird. So
maybe it's more international.
I feel like I feel like when I buy things from Asia, it comes via DHL.
Huh.
Hmm.
And then when we were doing the meal kits for a while, this was years ago when we lived in Pawtucket, and Sam bought me like trial memberships of all the different meal kits, and we worked our way through them. Those always came by laser ship, and it was always just some guy in a minivan with a laser ship magnet on the side of it. And the delivery was always at like 8 o'clock on Sunday night.
Weird.
But perishable, right? So I'm sure they have like a rhythm for when they get those things out. But very weird. Now, again, most of that is not besmirching the fine folks at the United States Postal Service, because they, you know, they're just competing with these flex workers for Amazon who are attempting to scratch out a living by getting gouged by Jeff Bezos.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm just saying, if only we had a monopoly on the delivery business.
Oh, don't worry. We'll get there. And it will suck when we get there. Speaking of deliveries, though, our mailbox is right on the house here in West Roxbury, which is super convenient. But I know I've mailed you guys stuff in the past. Now, Meredith, you're in a house, so your mail probably just comes right to your door.
Yeah.
And does yours come to the door, or do you have like one of those decentralized or centralized mailbox things because of your
yes.
configuration?
Yes. Since I am in a townhome association, they have two or three different banks of mailboxes. Fun fact. When I bought the house, they didn't tell me which mailbox was mine.
Oh, there was, exciting.
There was, it was mailbox number 4, but there's, as I've said, multiple banks, each of which has a 4 in it. So I had to go around and try the key until I found it.
Nice. It's a little bit of magic.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good segue into your first topic, Anne. How often do you schlep out there to check your decentralized mailbox?
Yeah, this is probably one of my major areas for improvement in my domestic life is I really should check the mail more than once every 3 weeks. But I don't feel like walking around the corner to do it. It's such a hassle to do that 45-second walk. I just don't feel like doing that. But then as a result, I get things... I don't get them. I open them later than I should have if they happen to be important. And I think the problem, one of the problems, is that since all of our bills are now either online or automated, I have no reason to expect that there's anything time sensitive in the mail.
Right.
Because I don't get bills anymore. And so then if somebody sends me something that I'm not expecting, I don't know to go more frequently to check it because I'm just going to go once every 3 weeks, throw away the circular, you know, and the stuff from Livonia and be done with it. But that does bite you in the ass every once in a while.
Right. We had that problem at Mayfair Lane. So we've got someone staying at the house for a while now. But over the summer when the construction was happening, it would just be every... once in a while we'd go out to check on it or we'd have somebody go in and check on our handyman or something. And the last tenant had left like a big plastic bin for deliveries because she got shit delivered every day, like every day. And so she put this thing out on next to the downstairs door for packages. And because the upper lane where was all being redone, we used to get our mail just through the front door upstairs. They were delivering the mail to the downstairs, and so they were just putting it in this bin. And when I was out there over the holidays, I realized that there was just a mountain of mail.
Oh.
And 90% of it was catalogs for like middle-aged woman clothes.
Ooh, J. Jill.
Yeah, but like, and other upscale brands I'd never heard of all selling like very expensive, unnecessary looking to me clothes. Of course, I wear the same things every day. What do I know? And then like the utility bills, which I was paying just, you know, automatic payments. But like, there must have been at least a dozen notices from the gas company and a dozen notices from the electric company. And they're all just piled up in there.
Oops.
I survived without any of them. The only thing that also hit is, you may remember this, I'm sure I've mentioned it at some point, when we're living in the house, every year we get a 1 pound box of toffee, like really fancy toffee from one of those high-end gift companies, addressed to someone who doesn't live at the house and from someone with just like a, hey, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, love John or whatever, somebody's corporate gift, somebody who used to live in our house is on this sure. list, and there's no way to return it. Like, there's no way to like cancel the order or figure out who sent it or forward it, because there's just not enough information on the box. And so I finally opened one year, and I was like, oh, toffee. One of those boxes of toffee sat in that outdoor box for like 6 weeks.
Yikes.
And you're supposed to keep it refrigerated, but it's winter, so it basically was refrigerated. And so the folks, the father of the woman who's staying in our house right now, and he was helping her move in, I know him, he's a friend. He texted me. He said, what's with this box? And I was like, oh, open it. Go for it. It's toffee. And I said, eat it at your own risk. And then 20 minutes later, I just get a, this toffee is amazing. So I guess it survived in the cold. But that was the other joy. That and all the electric bills. But here, I mean, I check the mail like at least once a day. Like, they come really late at the house. And so I'm always waiting and hoping. And I got my new Charlie card in the mail today. It was a good day. Right, silence. You're not from Boston. Charlie card is like the subway pass.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's so exciting, Bobby.
Well, thank you. Thank you for humoring me. I had a very old one that was so old it was expired. I mailed it in and they took the money off and put on a new one for me. End of story.
That's great.
Yep. And Meredith, I assume you check your mail daily because it gets shoved through your door in a box out of your house.
Not really. I probably should, but it's probably more like every couple of days because it's just mostly junk and mail that doesn't belong to me. So I have to do a lot of return to senders. So I'm not super incentivized to check the mail unless I have a package.
That is one of the things that happens fairly frequently here, is that I will get my neighbor's mail mixed in with mine, and there's no way to like drop it in their mailbox since they're all locked, which means if I want to make sure that it gets to my neighbor, which I should, I have to actually go over and make contact with the neighbor, which I don't want to.
Right.
So I do a lot of judging about do I really care enough to make sure they get this catalog? Or this looks important. I better make sure I take it over.
Mentioning catalog, I guess I should mention this other part about my mail life, which is that I love sending people mail they don't need.
Oh, yes, you do.
It's been a long time since I've signed anyone up for a mainstream magazine subscription. But
well, after you signed Mike up for that like diabetes magazine.
It's not meant to be an insult. It was just a free send. I did revive that part of my mind just last week. So in 4 to 6 weeks, my buddy Josh, who pulls this shit on me all the time, and I was long overdue to get him back, should be getting a deluge of free Christian magazine subscriptions.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I stopped short of sending him a Book of Mormon because they will come knock on your door after, and I'm not that mean. Honestly, I'm not even that mean to the missionaries. It seems like it would be just as cruel to them to send them out to an address that they, you know, I don't want to, they don't need to take my, you know, shrapnel and pranks. Mm-hmm. No, it was the copy of, I think it was Essence that I sent to Josh a long time ago, and he got some side eye from his black mailman.
Yep. I remember that.
So, my advice there is, Uline catalogs. Once you start getting Uline catalogs, you can't make them stop, and they're huge, massive. I get them at home. I get them at work. I've gotten them at every job I've ever had. Without
signing
up for them.
They can be interesting, though. We did used to get them at the store, and you know, if you're the kind of person that likes office supplies,
yeah,
they're worth a perusal.
And everything you could ever want: industrial garbage cans to office supplies to furniture to full office suite desks and everything you could possibly want is in there. It's kind of amazing. So
I probably don't read that part of them. I just stop after the office supplies, see how many colors of Sharpie I can get.
The first person who reaches out to me, I'm going to sign you up for a Uline catalog. I wanted to jump onto a couple of my pet peeves, because this is one of the things that I think helped launch this. One is stamps. I love fun stamps, and because I send a lot of mail for work, I'm convinced that using a fun stamp will increase the possibility of an envelope getting opened. And thus, I hate American flag stamps. And it's not just that I hate America, which, you know, I'm medium on America. But I don't like the forced patriotism of the default stamp being the American flag stamp. And if you're going to pay the same amount for it, no matter what it is, I would much rather have flowers or paintings or I don't know. But the problem is that I do big mailings and the stamps that come in rolls of 100 are the flag stamps. And so I'm always the asshole. And this happened this week, walking to the post office. Hey, I need 300 stamps. No, not rolls. What do you have? And then like being like, no, celebrate's not right. It's not a party. And no, those are for wedding invitations. I don't want those. They shouldn't say love. And the foil thank you stamps are great for acknowledgement letters, but I'm not going to use them for ask letters.
And meanwhile, the people behind you in line are killing you with the power of their minds.
Pretty much. And so this week I just said, give me 300 flowers. I don't care which flowers. You can mix and match, but don't give me flag stamps. And like, it's tough because like the John F. Kennedy stamps are beautiful, but you can't use those for work because you never know. Nope. You know, what you need is a Robert F. Kennedy stamp.
Oh, boy.
Because he's an independent. So, yeah, you got to be a little careful there. But I'm always the one fussing over that. I don't collect stamps. I'm not a philatelist. I just like different stamps. And if I dig into all my filing cabinet drawers here right now, I've probably got, you know, two or three left on a dozen different sheets of random discontinued stamps that I will use eventually. So my pet peeve one is when people buy American flag stamps, because you could have anything and you just do that. And my other
in my defense, I don't like talking to people, and the kiosk gives me American flag stamps.
In my defense, I don't give a shit.
You could have so many good stamps.
I really don't care. Huh. I think it's postage.
I think today, I almost bought Hot Wheels stamps, but I thought they wouldn't make the right impact for work.
No, probably not. Yeah.
You could have.
But I'm never sending anything for work, so I certainly don't have to consider what like ulterior motive I might be attaching to the mail, and like whatever. When I send the check in to pay my therapist, I don't know. She's not going to analyze my stamp.
Isn't she, though?
I hope not. I mean, I give her everything she needs face to face. Surely she doesn't have to resort to the stamp.
I'm just looking now. In arm's reach, I've got most of a sheet of Snowy Beauty. I've got a couple of sheets of JFK stamps, because I can really only use those for, you know, friends I know will appreciate them. I've got a couple of the gold foil thank you stamps left, which are beautiful, by the way. And if you're ever looking to thank people, those are an ideal option.
I don't know what those are.
Oh, they're very pretty. I'll find some art and send it to you. But it's just they're themed on the Dido song. The other pet peeve is, you know, in my work, we do a lot of like fill-in forms. We're getting people to give us their addresses on donation forms or mailing list signups or whatever. And you'll see people's zip code written out as zip. And you'll see with a capital Z but lowercase imp. And ZIP is an acronym. ZIP stands for Zone Improvement Plan.
Oh my God.
And wow. So it irritates the living hell out of me when I see it and it's not all capital letters. I understand that this means nothing to anyone.
As so, long as you get that.
But you'll city, state, you'll see with capital C, capital S, and then you'll see ZIP with the capital Z, and I will fix it every single time. Every time.
So then in literature, when a zip code is referenced, you would say the zip would have to be capitalized, but code can be lowercase?
The C should be capitalized because a zip code is a specific thing. So all cap zip and then capital C code. Zip code.
Meredith, I'm starting to worry about him.
I think he's more pedantic than you and I.
Well, I mean, if, I guarantee there's a statistician version of this in your world, right?
Oh, a million.
Yeah, but this is my world. This is my thing. I talk about direct mail response rates and marketing and, you know, SIP. Just, you know.
I can even tell you what mine is. Mine is the incorrect capitalization of units. As okay. In specifically when we talk kilowatt hours of electricity and people capitalize the K. No, it's a watt. It's right. A kilowatt. Oh. It's the W that's capitalized.
Mine is people using the word data inappropriately because data is a plural noun and it should be data are, not data is.
Oh no, you've lost that battle long ago.
I know, but I still keep up the good fight.
You're that guy on Iwo Jima that's still fighting World War II.
Yep, that's me.
See, we all have our things. I just saw, I think it might have been a TikTok video. Got to get them in while I can, right? I'm kidding. They're not
long for this world.
Decibel is lowercase b, capital B, because the B yep. is actually named after Alexander Graham Bell.
I saw that like in a meme mm-hmm. or something the other day.
Yeah. See?
Yeah.
See, we all have our things. ZIP. Zone Improvement Plan. There you go. Because there weren't zip codes before. I think it was the early 1960s when they did that. It's just freewheeling whatever. And of course, if you have 6 minutes to kill, this is a great twice a year reminder to go watch the Gary Goldman bit about how the states got their abbreviations, which is also great.
I can't make it all the way through that.
I can and I have and I will again.
Oh, I've watched it. This. Yeah.
It is my favorite. And what's a mail hack?
I want to know how you guys do mail ask. I want to hear more about your email preview thing so you know what you're getting before you get it.
That was my next item.
Well, please, so, Meredith.
It's called, what is it called? USPS Daily Digest, I believe. And you can sign up on the USPS website. And what they do is every morning I get an email around, I don't know, 7, 8 in the morning. And I get a picture of every piece of mail that I'm going to get that day if I'm lucky.
Who is taking these pictures?
I think they take them already. I think
the robots. Because they're going to scan them anyway to sort them. Like, it's not monkeys sorting them. Like, it's a machine. The machine takes the picture.
But it's so much mail.
Yeah.
But all they got to do is snap a pic of each one. Sometimes they're upside down. Sometimes there's no pictures. So it's not a perfect system.
This just seems like a lot of work for something that's going to arrive at your house in a couple of
hours. Well, I think it's automated, and sometimes it's very helpful because I'm like, because you also get a list at the end of packages that are arriving today, arriving soon, or outbound. Not that I ever have any outbound packages because I don't. But sometimes it's nice to know like, oh, that thing that I ordered is going to arrive today, so I better keep an eye out for it. Or, oh, it's not going to come until Tuesday, so I don't need to think about it.
Yeah.
And Bobby, you get this email too, right?
I do. I believe the formal name for the Daily Digest sign up is actually Informed Delivery.
Yes.
So you can sign up, you create a USPS account, it's free. And I get them for both Mayfair Lane and the apartment here. And so
I think it makes sense for Mayfair Lane because you're not there. Right. So you get to see what's coming.
Well, but it makes sense here too because, like, if I know. Something important is coming, then I will rush to check the mail even faster than I always do.
I was going to say, but you've already said you stand at the mailbox with your tail wagging every day.
Sometimes I'm out of town, you know.
The interesting thing about this is that my mail carrier knows who lives here, and she does not deliver stuff that doesn't belong, but I still get it in the preview. So I get things that she is going to return to sender for me.
Ooh, that's nice.
There's a guy who named Isaiah who used to live here, and he has not done his due diligence in forwarding his mail to his new address. So my mail preview almost every day has something for Isaiah White, and he doesn't live here, but it almost never shows up in my mailbox because the mail carrier knows not to deliver it since I did a return to sender once. So it's very interesting to see like everything from the Michigan Department of Health or whatever it is that is trying to contact Isaiah and just cannot for the past four years.
I mean, that's slightly worrisome.
Yeah, it is. But there's not much I can do about it.
Right. I mean, it's not your problem to solve.
Yeah. And that's, you know, kind of you'd even care because it would be really easy to just throw it out and move on.
Well, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to tamper with the mail. That's a federal offense, right?
That's right.
So,
and we all know how worried you are about going to jail for minor offenses.
Very, very worried. Yeah. So I like to send it where it needs to go because it seems important. Like, I'm not going to bother with junk mail and flyers and stuff, but if it's something from, you know, he'll get stuff from CHIPS, which is the, you know, Children Health Insurance Program, and I don't want that to get missed, so yeah, of course I'm going to send that back.
Is it hard being such a good person?
I'm the best person.
In my office, we occasionally get mail for people who had our suite before us, and it's some sort of food company, and I know because I just open it all. Like, we get a fair amount of mail, so I just open it all, and I open something that wasn't ours because I didn't realize it. Until I opened it.
Felony.
Well, it's addressed to us, so not a felony. But you know, it's addressed to our suite. But
oh, it just doesn't have your name on
right,
it.
Right, it's the different name. But let's just say they owe a lot of tolls in other states.
Oh dear.
They've got quite the toll bill that seems to be piling up.
I wonder if that stuff ever catches up to people.
I don't know. I mean, I think you can get your, you know, registration suspended or whatever if it's in a, I don't know how they reciprocate. In Buffalo, it was always a big deal because Canadians would blow through all the toll access things on the highways and there would be no recourse because they're in Canada. Like, there's no way to make Canada suspend their registrations or licenses or whatever. And it's a fight all the time. Like, we're paying a dollar to go over that bridge and the Canadians are doing it for free. So anyway,
those jerks.
Yeah, well, when you take away the toll booths and replace them with the gantries and there's no human to interact with, right?
Yep.
That's the
then
cost.
We find out how nice Canadian people actually are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's all a lie. Most Canadians are terrible. just stray thoughts. Speaking of that, I've mentioned on the show before that an undelivered Christmas card from a Canadian relative to my aunt in Buffalo when she lived there got delivered to me like 15 years later. Because I lived on the same street as her. Have I not told that story?
I don't think so.
So when my aunt was in college, or maybe just early in her adulthood, she lived in Buffalo for a year or two. And she had an apartment on Linden Avenue. And many years later, I would live on Linden Avenue for about 2 years. And I got a Christmas card in scratchy old handwriting delivered to me. And I sort of scratched my head and it all looked old and beat up. And I opened it. It was addressed to my aunt, and it was a Christmas card that a distant Canadian relative had sent to my aunt at some point in the intervening years, long after she had moved away from Buffalo and long before I had moved to Buffalo. And at some point, somehow it resurfaced, and someone said, oh, Pape, Linden. We got a Pape on Linden, and they just delivered it to me.
That's so interesting. Like, what sort of eddy was it caught in?
A mail
service eddy that it swum around in for 15, 20, 30 years or whatever.
I don't know. I
and mean, how did it get out again?
Yeah,
how
does somebody
it, how did
just
it surface?
Look at that with their eyes and think, oh, I know that person?
I guess. I don't know.
Weird.
This is where we need an expert. And we know we have at least one who listens to the show. So I expect answers.
Help us out.
Not quite as dramatic, but I was on a Mayfair Lane board call a couple of nights ago, and
oh, you're so lucky.
Amy, my neighbor on Mayfair Lane, Amy, was like, "Hey, I just got your Christmas card. Mailed it the Thanksgiving weekend."
Wow.
And it was postmarked like November 28th, and it got to her over the last weekend.
Well, better late than never,
and,
I guess.
I mean, other people on the call who they, you know, all those neighbors are on the Christmas card list, and everyone was like, "We got yours in early December or late November." Like, yeah. We got it right after it was mailed. And
Amy's just got
stuck to the inside of a box somewhere or something.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway.
Amazing it just didn't get recycled somehow.
Yep. All right. Well, I'm shocked we've already made it an hour. So let me, I'll plow through a couple more things because your lists are depleted. Yep. I mentioned childhood labor already. In college, freshman year of college, I did run a full-scale mailhouse out of my dorm room a couple of times because
of course
I was a work-study student doing fundraising letters for the conductor I was doing work for, for his choirs. And we did.
By the way, I have a little bit of, I do have experience with that childhood labor since my grandmother was in the Minnesota State House of Representatives. And when she was up for re-election every 2 years, I did a few times help stuff envelopes.
There you go. You get really good at it. In fact, just this week, I have one folding machine that I love, and it used to be my old roommate's in my old office in Boston. And I'm still friends with the people who now run that little organization, and I borrowed it this week just so I could run the 300. Now, in the time it took me to go grab it and bring it back, I could have hand-folded those 300 letters, but it was,
sure.
It was a lot more fun to watch them go through the folding machine.
How much of an investment would it be to get one for yourself?
It's like $1,000.
Dang.
Whoa. Yeah.
He had to fold a lot of letters to get a return on that investment.
When my buddy Nick bought it when he was running that orchestra, he had a weird grant that he had to use for like capacity investment or something. And he had about $1,000 left and he had to spend it in like the last couple of days. And we thought about ways that he could spend it for the betterment of the company long term. And we finally decided on the letter folding machine. And it's pretty amazing. I'm stalling because I'm gonna send you the video of the letting folding machine in action. It's one of those things that makes me very happy. While I'm doing that, I will mention the USPS has a podcast that I don't listen to, but it's in my feed only because I love that it's named, and I can only say it this way, Mailin' It. Just makes me happy that somebody over there has enough of a sense of humor. Just
have you ever listened to it?
Yeah, a couple episodes early on when it first came out, and they were really pushing it hard, and they push it in those informed delivery emails, which is why I'm always reminded of it. In fact, just today there was a graphic in mine for it. I popped it into the Slack. The latest episode is how USPS handles hazardous materials. And I did listen to it because they occasionally have interviews with like the people who handle mail fraud and stuff like that. And it's actually nerdy and surprisingly interested. And I assume it's hosted by like the few young civil servants there who, you know, have a sense of humor about what they do. I don't know.
Oh, it's hosted by young people?
Mailing it. youngish people, I think. Okay. I'm guessing.
So according to this graphic, the hazardous materials are a cell phone, an old cell phone, a lighter, a set of mercury thermometer?
I think it is. And some batteries.
And some, oh, batteries. I was going to go flash drive, but
candy
obviously
bars.
They're batteries.
Yeah, I think they're not Duracell for legal reasons batteries.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I mean, I would like there to be some toxic sludge in that graphic to be more exciting.
When are you mailing toxic sludge?
I don't know. Hazardous materials.
By the way, what are we all doing with our batteries?
Throwing them away. I can't recycle them here.
Right. I
don't know. The University of Minnesota used to have a battery recycling program, and then we got a notice that we should just throw our batteries in the trash now.
Yeah, I really thought we weren't supposed to do that, but I don't have an option.
There's nowhere else to put them.
Nope.
Yeah. Okay. Just making sure it's not just me. We don't have like a growing box of wasted batteries in the basement, which seems like it would be actually more dangerous.
I used to have a baggie, but I ended up throwing it all in the trash because there's nowhere to put it.
To cap this thrilling medium talk, I, just as we were sitting down to record, quickly scratched out my top five letter carriers.
Oh, here's the calendar.
Okay. Yeah.
And I've got one in the spirit of the Dan Le Batard show for people who listen to it. One OLI, one outside looking in. And that is the mailbox from Blue's Clues.
Okay.
Yeah, because it didn't make the top five, but it was close.
Yeah.
Number okay. five is Sinbad's character in Jingle All the Way.
I haven't seen it.
Me neither.
I don't know his name. I just know he wears the letter carry hat and has the satchel. So it's a thin list. It was a struggle to get to five. But Sinbad and Jingle All the Way. Number four is Reba the Mail Lady from Pee Wee's Playhouse.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Number three is Carl Malone from the Utah Jazz.
Obviously.
Yeah. Number two is Newman from Seinfeld. And then number one is Cliff Clavin, obviously.
I'm sorry, there is an omission from this list.
Please.
Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Ooh. Good. That's call. A good point. All right, I'm going to jettison Sinbad. We'll move Reba to five, Carl Malone to four, and he can go in at number three, and then it's
all right.
Newman and Cliff.
The go. Only time Cliff Clavin ever won anything.
Exactly. And with that, listeners, we didn't come up with a question of the week. I guess the question of the week is maybe how often do you check your mail?
Yeah.
Because we're going to get a broad spectrum there.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I'd be interested to know.
Yeah.
Please say some of you are like me.
Yeah, or like the time I sent, this is many, many, many years ago, I sent Christy some, like some, those Reese's peanut butter, I think they were either Easter eggs or pumpkins. I can't remember which time of year it was. Because I know she likes them. And I think she got them a firm 3 months later or something.
Oh, no.
Because they've been sitting in her, you know, mailbox thing for.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. And she used to have to have them sent to her office or something.
Right.
For strange reasons.
Yeah. So question of the week is how often do you check your mail? And I'm going to keep rolling because I've got Tishy Recommends. And this is a quick one. It's a podcast. It's called Pablo Torre Finds Out. Pablo Torre is a sports reporter, but also covers a lot of other stuff. I mentioned the Le Batard show a minute ago on the same network. Pablo Torre now has his own podcast that comes out three times a week. He investigates all sorts of random stuff. Sometimes it's silly, sometimes it's not. But the most recent episode I thought would resonate with our demographic. It just came out on March 12th. It won't be the most recent episode by the time this airs, but you can dig into it in his archives. It's called Tearing Up My Charts. Was MTV's TRL countdown rigged?
That sounds perfect for Hillary.
And it talks about the time that a chain letter campaign, so it's on theme, today's topic, helped get an old NKOTB song that nobody cared about anymore on the charts at TRL, much to the chagrin of everyone there who didn't want to hear the song. And I'll leave it there because there's more to it than that. But it was fascinating. And it's definitely the kind of topic where when they start talking about it, you're like, oh, it's going to be an 8-episode Wondery thing where they're going to edit the hell out of it and repeat everything 6 times. Nope. One episode covers it, closes it. It's great. Other recent topics, an episode called The Hard Truth About Orgasms in Sport and Post-Nut Clarity and Whether Athletes.
What?
Yep. Also an episode about Rick Pitino being a creep, which is true.
Shocker.
Yeah. Yep. So all sorts of stuff. Most of it's usually sports related, some of it a little less, but yeah. Yep. Definitely worth a listen. It's become a regular part of my feed. He is so good. It's such a good show. Pablo
Why
Torre
do we have to
out.
Use the word nut for orgasm?
I don't know, but I don't for the record, but that phrase they talk about a lot in the episode.
Sure. Well, sure, it sure. works if you bank at PNC.
Boy, it's got to be awkward working there.
Or and? Very, you know, you're very clear-headed all the time.
Yeah, relaxed. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's a lot of cigarette breaks.
Yep.
All right.
Sorry.
It's time to get involved with the show. Our website is thisshowhaseverything.com, where you can find all the archives of our episodes. We've not done a show on, what was it, post-nut?
Clarity.
Clarity in sports. Not going to lie, that sounds kind of interesting.
See?
But probably the better option is to visit our Facebook group, where you can answer the question of the week and talk about anything that you'd like to talk about. You can email us at tcshow@gmail.com, and it would be great if you would like to be as cool as Ann Miner and send us a voice memo in that email. Just record yourself. Like Meredith said last time, you can do it as many times as you want. It's not an answering machine. You don't just get one shot at it. You can re-record it until you don't sound like a complete fool, and then send it to us. And we'll just be amazed at how incredibly articulate you are. Like Anne is. Not me, her. The AOL keyword is, always has been, and always will be, Tishy. And thanks for joining us. And that was everything about mail?
Maybe. Probably.
Maybe.
You didn't sound confident.
I still think we could have done the strippers.
Yeah.
Some other week.
The problem is that I have no experience with male strippers. So, like, what am I going to talk about? The time I watched Magic Mike?
Maybe that's our next show.
I guess.
I have one story about male strippers, and that's it.
Ooh.
That's one more than I have, but I'm still young.
Let's see what Hillary's got.
Yeah. Yeah. Bobby, you could have a career change at any time.
Boy, I don't... I would... So the things I would pull... it just wouldn't... I can barely get on the elliptical.